Well, it probably could come home, but he's probably over to the mall and stuck in traffic is what I'm thinking, because I was over in that area this morning, and I want to tell you, Mr. Mann, whew. Good morning. I'm Tom Gozzi. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. You knew that. And I have to confess to a grievous error. Oh, my goodness. How numb can I be? I'm on the radio a week ago today. 7 days ago. I'm on the radio. And I'm talking about the shortest day of the year being today. It was yesterday. I was close. So we're already in positive numbers. The days are getting longer. Can you feel the warmth? I can. It's a sign. That's what it is. Anyway, good morning. Let's see. You know, I didn't set up the text thing, and I didn't want to do it while Darlene Love was singing there because I didn't want to make a mistake, which there's been occasion. I have been at this radio station on the air, and I have hit the wrong button at the right time, and all craziness ensues. Hilarity ensues. Here we go. All right. We got the text line up at 601-207-4478 on December 22nd. Two shopping days left for Christmas. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. In keeping, excuse me, with the holiday season, Mrs. Gozzi, my dear wife of 45 years, had requested for probably the past, it's more than 5 years. I know that. As I sit here Saturday morning, I know it's more than 5 years. She's asked me to change the colors upstairs in the house to paint. I don't like the paint. And I have put her off, and she, you know, she always tells me a color she likes, and I always say, oh God, no, not that color. So I learned you don't fight City Hall. All right, we'll do the color you want. And then it was shades of the color, and I'll pick a lighter color. She'll pick a darker one. Okay. So we got the color she likes. And I commenced to painting Sunday night or Sunday afternoon. We did our bedroom first because that was the room that needed it the most, I guess. So moved everything from one room into another. That's a lot of fun. I'd forgotten how much fun it was moving all the furniture around. It's just enjoyable. So got everything set up in the alternate room, and I started in painting. And it went pretty quick. I cut in, and you know, I painted probably almost 60 years. I did start very young. I have to admit, my mother gave me a paint roller when I was a kid just to shut me up, I'm sure. So I could move pretty quick, and I think an hour and a half I had the room painted, and it was a lot of cutting in on it. But and I had to go back the next day in daylight and touch up. And I have to say, excuse me, and I've done this more in the past 2 weeks than in recent memory. You know, the definition of insanity, excuse me, is doing the same thing over and expecting a different result. Well, every time I use this particular company's paint, I lament it doesn't cover well. It's runny, it's stupid to work with, but they were open on Sunday, excuse me, and I bought 4 gallons, three of the paint and one for trim, and I will not embarrass the company with their name other than it rhymes with repo, and it was not good paint. I'm not happy with it, but it does cover after a couple of coats. And we're going over it with a darker color. We're using a gray, and we're going over light pastel-y type colors, and it just is like, oh, yeah, well, we get the guaranteed one coat paint is $15 a gallon more. No. Uh-uh. Come on. I'm old enough. Paint used to be $9 a gallon. Come on, guys. paid $32 a gallon for paint that doesn't cover. But fortunately, I overbought, so we're good. So I knowing myself and knowing my impatience and knowing I don't like to paint, fortunately, technology has brought me to the point where I could tolerate painting. And here's what I do. Okay, I don't wear shoes or socks. I'm barefoot. I put on shorts. I don't know why. It just seems like the right thing to do. It's easier to get paint off my legs than it is clothes. Although I drip no paint on my clothing. I did have painted toenails, though. It was kind of interesting. And I put on my wireless Bluetooth headphones, which are very high fidelity, and put on YouTube and just hit Louis Armstrong and just let them babies roll. And I want to tell you, it was great. So I listened to two Louis Armstrong concerts. One was in the 60s. I want to say 61 maybe. There's a concert in Berlin. It was about 50 minutes long. And all the songs I want to hear, and you know, just I'm bopping through and get done. And then it goes to the concert in Sweden. And apparently it was the same tour because it was the same set list. They sounded just a wisp different, but it was good. And it made the job go fast. And then the next day for doing the touch-up and the second coat, I put on Gilbert Gottfried. Now, talk about juxtaposition. He has a podcast that's great to listen to. And anyway, we got to take a break here. It says, Tom, Sherwin-Williams is open on Sunday, but I didn't go by a Sherwin-Williams. Yes, I could have gone to Sherwin-Williams. Sherwin-Williams or Benjamin Moore, my two go-to paints. And I didn't. So, you know, I told you what the definition of insanity is. And, you know, it is what it is. It's Tom on Sunday morning. Although it's Saturday morning now, and it's hot and cold, and it's the boss. Hey, we're back. It's 8:22. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. We're right here. 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. So what I've done, I've lollygagged the rest of the week just doing touch up, and there've been a lot of places where I made I got paint on the woodwork, so I cleaning up my messes and started cutting in the next room, and refinished the floors while we were at it. I mean, I want to tell you. When Gosi goes and does this, he just goes all out. I'm telling you what, Mr. Mahan, it looks good. It ultimately looked good. Took a couple coats, but I mean, there were places I'm painting a lot of times in the evening because I'm at work all day. So in the early morning before I leave for work, I can do some touch-up, and that all worked out well. So that was probably the biggest excitement of the week, although there were other things. We got a phone call, though, so let's start out with the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm wondering if you have any notion of how we're doing on degree days.
I have no notion. I have not been keeping track, and I'll have to shoot an email to Herb Crosby. Herb, if you're listening, shoot me an email. Let me know where we're at. He may be listening
to
the program.
Is there anywhere to get degree days online?
There are. I think the Weather Underground, is that one that shows them? I'd have to look. There's no place that consistently had it that I was happy with that. Bangor Daily had them. I don't know if they list them anymore. So I'll check during the next break, see if I could make myself a note here, because, you know, who knows what could happen between now and the next break.
Right, okay.
But I'll check and see. We'll see if we can't get some.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, tie me down to something else I got to do on Saturday morning, right? I mean, come on. So we got this building coming, right, that we're going to be putting. I'm not putting it up. Somebody else's. I have to insulate it, though. And the question was put to me, what size overhead doors are you putting in? And I've been kind of clunking around. I wasn't sure, you know, what I wanted. I wanted to look for a deal. The company that I'm getting the building from had uninsulated doors. I want insulated doors. And so I said, well, and they charge for the opening to put in the rough opening. And I said, well, if I don't have the door ready by the time they come, I've got a hole in the side of the building I got to cover up as we're trying to stay warm as we're doing work inside. So I said, look, just do the building with an entry door, nothing else, and we'll pick up the pieces. And I've been watching for trying to find a deal on overhead doors. And I found somebody who had a bunch of new doors that came from some store building supply place that went out of business. And I've got like four to six doors. I'm not sure exactly how many. It's a lot of parts. So I did a preliminary sort of them. I had to go pick them up. And I still have to sort out the hardware, which is a big pile of stuff. But we've got enough doors to do what we need to do and do the next building too, I think. And it was an early Christmas present. We had to go up to Central Maine to pick them up. And, of course, the snow threw the kibosh into that a little bit. But we got them back in my shop, and we're going to figure out what we have. And I need to, you know, I've always wanted to play with garage doors because what was more fun than painting, putting in garage doors. So there. I'm thinking I might just pay somebody. I've done them, and I've watched professionals do them, and I'm impressed with how expedient they are. A little bit of experience goes a long way. So I'm trying to think if I remember enough of watching professionals do this that I can do it myself. I'm not sure. We'll find out. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. We got a call on line one. Let's head back over. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I've heard you tell stories of how to clean up the plastic lenses on the new cars.
Yes.
Can you repeat that with a little detail, and I'll listen off the air.
Yes, sir. Yeah, sure. I've got the whole process has refined significantly for me. The best way that I found is to get some scratch and swirl remover, a little bit of rubbing compound. And I get the, it's turtle wax. It's like $2 or $3 for a squeeze bottle of it. And a couple of paper towels. I rub it on with one towel. Just rub it into the lens, cover the whole lens. Try not to get it on the paint. It doesn't hurt the paint. You just have to wipe it off. And I buff it until the compound, which is liquid, stiffens up and is no longer liquidy. And then I take a clean paper towel and wipe it. And what that does is it removes the oxidation from the plastic. The plastic lenses are polycarbonate plastic, and they will yellow with ultraviolet radiation from the sun. So when you compound it, you remove that yellowed surface and that sort of cloudy surface and get back to bare plastic. At that point, it starts to weather again. So you could get something additional, which would be a, it's a silicon-based coating. I'm trying to think of what they call it. It's some kind of enhancer that you would put on the plastic trim on your car. And it's usually silicon-type stuff, and it just protects it. Silicon is kind of a slippery, clear material that enhances the coloration of colored plastic when you put it on. And if you're doing a lens, it just kind of spiffs it up a little bit more. But you don't have to do that. I've done it with a couple other things. I've had folks suggest using DEET, which is just a solvent that eats into the plastic a bit. I've gone over, but I find the compounding is the best. You can go over it with DEET insecticide after the fact. But again, you're just working with the solvents to spiff it up. What's the other one? Toothpaste doesn't work as well. But again, that's a very minor abrasive. And I think the compounding stuff works the best. And it's under like $3. And I get this big bottle. I do a lot of lenses. And the bottle lasts me years. And a dollop the size of a nickel is usually enough to do a car lens. If you think you need to do it again, I would clean it off and then go back, you know, and start all over, do a second approach if you have, if it's really yellowed. And you'll be impressed with the change. It really does work well. And if it's really nasty, then some kind of coating to protect it usually enhances it a little bit too, makes it look a little bit better. But just an abrasive, that very minor, it's a swirl abrasive anti-swirl. So, but it's made by Turtle Wax, and it's a couple bucks, It's between $2 and $3 for a bottle. You know, maybe a half pint bottle. Goes a long way. So, hope that helps. We got to take another break. I could tell you about plumbing adventures when we come back from the break. Let's see, what do we got here? Ah, we got the man right here. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back. It's 8:35. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. And I just want to mention my friend Alan over at General Appliance. If you're looking for appliance parts and service, he's on Center Street in Brewer, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. And his phone number is 989-4341. That's 989-4341. We don't want broken appliances for Christmas. And if Santa doesn't bring you new ones, have Alan help you fix the old ones. 989-4341. That's the magic number in Brewer to take care of all those appliance woes. Oh, I got a text message here. Tom, I haven't heard you mention the end of Home Power magazine. And that's right. I knew about it, gotten all the emails from them. I think that the Home Power magazine, if you're not familiar with it, was sort of a nuts and bolts kind of magazine that told you how to do alternative energy stuff, generate your own power at home, photovoltaics, and solar hot water, wood boilers, and electric car stuff. And it was a good magazine. I subscribed to it for a while. I wrote for them. I actually wrote an article, 5-6 years ago about heat pump water heaters. And their demise, I think, has something to do with a couple of things. One is the pervasiveness of photovoltaics, solar electric, in the country. It's no longer a great mystery for many folks. It's not necessarily a do-it-yourself project. And if it is, there's a lot of information out there on the web. I think Google has helped to kill Home Power magazine just because you can find so many YouTube videos and Google everything. I'm sure, as with any other print media, their revenues have dropped off. Although they paid me handsomely when I wrote my article. And I appreciated that, and they were good people to work with. And I hate to see it go. I suspect the publisher saw the diminishing returns and was getting old enough that he, saw there wasn't a market for selling the magazine. So it's sad to see, because that was my go-to thing for many years, and now I just get online and can look up most things, and a lot of their old articles are online. At some point, one of the reasons I subscribed years ago was they had a CD library of all their earlier publications that I think was searchable, if my memory serves me right, and so I thought that would be a good resource, which I probably have never used, but it's kind of cool to look back at the old issues. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. We've got a call on line one. We'll go right there. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. Having a problem with my furnace losing its prime.
Okay.
And I wonder if Tom would have any suggestions.
Tom, you're on the air. I don't have any good suggestions offhand. I think my experience is that when it comes to a problem like that, we'll put it out there to maybe somebody else has better idea than I. I usually call somebody in because it's probably an air leak somewhere that is causing it to lose its prime, and it could be tricky to track down, and I've usually just passed that on to a service guy or a girl or lady or person. There we go. I'll be correct. So I don't have any good advice there, and in this kind of weather, I mean, we've got a break in the weather here, so it's probably a good time to call and have somebody just come look at it. It's well worth the cost. And here's the thing. Not necessarily related to oil, but to anything mechanical, okay? endlessly people will ask me to come fix this, do that, and I don't have time, okay? B, I could possibly fix it, possibly, okay? But C, I fix it, okay? And then I own it. And I don't have the time to just keep going back. That's what service people do. That's what they do all the time. They own it once you call them. So, and if they mess it up, they have to fix it. And God knows I've messed up enough stuff that that's another reason for me not to go do it. Because I, you know, personally, I don't have the time. If you're home and you have, you know, if you're inclined to work on it, I'd be looking at all the connections to make sure that everything is airtight. So it doesn't take much to lose a prime on things. It could also be an oil pump, too. But, again, this is not my forte. I'm not an oil burner guy. And I don't even play one on TV. When I had a TV show, we brought oil burner guys in. So I'm sorry I'm not more help. Speaking of plumbing, I discovered last month at my house, I was having a drain that was backing up. If you emptied the kitchen sink, you would hear gurgling in the laundry sink, which is also in the kitchen. And it didn't make sense. And it still doesn't quite make sense. But I happened to be in the basement one day. You know, kind of, I wasn't looking because of the plumbing. I was just down there looking around. You know, you go in the basement, you look around and see what's going on. And I noticed in that line, that drain line, I had installed a check valve when I put the system in. And there was no reason on God's green earth for a check valve to be there. There's no reason. Sometimes we'll have a backflow, which is a check valve, on a drain line maybe where the drain leaves the house. If there's a potential, like my daughter, excuse me, lives in Winterport. And her house is a little bit lower in the the sewer system. And the thought was, well, gee, if there was ever a problem in the system, and I, for some reason, I had in my head that there was a problem with the system that, you know, could back up into somebody's basement. And her house was lower than maybe a lot of the town. So I put a backflow valve in, which was basically just a big check valve. I put one in this inch and a half line, and I'm not sure why I did it. It shouldn't be there. It shouldn't have been there. So, and it took me about 2 weeks to remember to bring home two couplings and a piece of pipe and PVC cement to do it. But I did it last weekend after painting. I was done painting for the day, and I needed some more adventure in my life because, you know, painting's not enough. So I went down, and I didn't have usually I use a hacksaw. I didn't have one. I used my regular saw, and I cut the check valve out. And, of course, the fetid, foul-smelling, putrid stuff in the drain line was delightful. And I think I was barefoot and still in shorts when I was doing it, so I got to wash up afterwards. But put it back together, and it solved the problem. The check valve went in the trash. I've said it before. I had these check valves from somewhere. They're brand new, and it just seemed like an idea. I suppose this is like 15 years ago to put it in the line. There was no rational reason. The other thing I noticed in the process, you know, I had loosened up, everything was strapped in place. Is I changed the pitch on the line a little bit. I made it pitch a little bit more. I was able to do that. So there was an area that looked like it might be more level than sloping downhill towards the septic tank. So I tweaked that, and all problems have been solved. So that was a wonderful plumbing experience that went reasonably well, except for the there's always the unknown of cutting into a sewer line or a septic line or a drain line to see what wonderful new smells one will learn. How's that coming from my house? There's a joke there I can't use on the radio. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. Everything's quiet right now. I guess that's because it's Christmas time. Let's see. I had ordered these 12-volt circulator pumps for my heating system because now that I'm done with doing the check valve, I want to change over the whole heating system, and I want to test out these 12-volt circulators, which could be a recipe for a major disaster because I've had very mixed results from using these 12-volt circulators that are from China. But they're cheap, and they're plastic, so they will not corrode. I like in my system using non-corrodable things. So I said, well, let's give it a go. If it happens at my house, what's the worst that can happen? My wife will throw me out. And we still have a wood stove. We can still stay warm if we have to. So the remaining, I ordered a couple of pumps, and I said, oh, that's not enough. So I ordered more, and I have a feeling they shipped direct from China because they took way too long to get here. But they landed here this week, so I've maybe today, maybe tomorrow, maybe Monday. We're closed Monday, so I can start to rough all this system together. And probably we definitely have to do a YouTube video on this because we're doing some very unique things with hydraulic separators, and it's getting a little exotic as time goes on. But speaking of exotic, let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello?
Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
I have two questions for
you.
I'm interested in putting a power vent in the gable of an attic,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to me I remember you saying something about a moisture problem or something with doing that.
Yeah.
And the other question is the house has 6-inch rafters with 6 inches of insulation, and I'm curious about blowing insulation into it, and how do you keep the soffit vents open?
Well, the power vent I'm not a big fan of just because in an attic just because it has the potential for drawing more air out of the house up into the attic, so it becomes critical to do part B that you're asking about, which is blowing in cellulose on top of fiberglass to deal with that gable end. The eave edge there. It really kind of depends on the roof pitch. If you've got a really steep roof angle, you could just use the prop vents, the plastic vents that go in against the roof, get it down into the eave, which would allow air to get up by the cellulose, and then you can blow right up against it. And you only need to vent where the insulation would impinge on the roof itself. So usually one prop vent per bay is adequate. And then I would put a 12. I'd try to go for at least 12 inches of cellulose over top of that. If you have a low roof angle, you're really not getting the insulation value you should have out at the eave. And there's a couple ways to approach this. One is to put a prop vent in, and then maybe a piece of foam behind that before you blow the cellulose in. You could actually use cut and fit foam and space it away from the roof and do the same thing the vent is doing. And the idea here is out at that eave, if it's a low angle roof, you can't get much blown in insulation in there. So it tends to be an area where there's heat loss, which also tends to be the area where the ice dams form. So enhancing the insulation right at that section is really critical.
So if being such a low angle, then I should put a proper vent in on the soffit end and put a 12-inch piece of foam along that ceiling line or roof
yeah.
line in order to keep the insulation from going there.
Yeah, and what you could do in lieu of the proper vent is just put some spacers on the in between the foam and the roof and use the foam as a proper vent.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because the prop vents, I don't remember, they're not the cheapest things in the world. You could probably cut your own out of foam and save some money and get more insulation in there.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what we'll try to do with it then.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas. We got some texts here. Where am I? As a certified electrical person, I found the code corner feature back to Home Power Magazine. I found the Code Corner feature a terrific source. Link mentioned above open access of the entire 31 run to be available in 2019. So I, Home Power got into the as I said, the really gory details of wiring up photovoltaic systems in particular, where you're apt to be working as your own electrician, and detail that maybe the average person couldn't quite grasp completely, but it was there in black and white to share with your electrician if he or she did not have photovoltaic experience. So it was a great resource, and I hate to see it gone. I got Jim from Bristol. What do we got here? Good morning, Tom. Got to use insulated duct hose to his vent. I'm assuming it's a bathroom and not a power vent. I'm not sure what I'm following you there, Jim. I'm going back. I'm not going to go backwards right now. I'll check that during the next break. I'm not sure which phone call we're talking about. Another one, looking at a used 4x4 dump truck for firewood, plowing, diesel or gas. What are the benefits and drawbacks of each? A diesel truck tends to run a long time. They seem to be very durable. I'm not a big fan of diesel trucks. I hate the noise. They're very powerful, very torquey. If you're hauling firewood in particular, there's a lot of advantages. If we're talking like an F-250 or a 2500 GMC or something bigger, they get real expensive, diesel vehicles. Gas vehicles are always cheaper. I think they're easier to maintain when something does have to be done to it. I prefer gas. I like them because they're quieter. The older I get, the more I want things to be quiet. But they're not necessarily as powerful. But I think if you're talking a full size, big dump truck, you're probably talking about a diesel vehicle in terms of longevity. But be prepared to spend some money. That's not a cheap date. That's for sure. Tom, big recall on Ford F-Series trucks, block heaters catching fire. Well, thank you, Tom. Tom in Sangerville. Thank you, Tom. He says, Merry Christmas. Truck's on fire. Merry Christmas. I'm curious if this is really new ones or just, did they have block heaters as standard equipment, or are we talking about add-ons? I'm not quite clear on that. I don't use a block heater. If my truck isn't going to start, I don't think I should be. I shouldn't be forcing it. Fortunately, most things I have start. I've got a moment here before break. So the one thing that I deal with, and I've dealt with several times in the past week or so, with Priuses in particular, but it would be with any car, is 12 volt batteries. And you know, up till a couple days ago, we were dealing with weather that really pushes 12-volt batteries in terms of how well they're going to react and how well they're going to run in wintertime. And it really kind of sorts out whether or not you need a new battery. I think a lot of times, though, if a battery has got some sulfation because the car maybe sat 6 months ago and it sulfated up a bit, it starts to indicate that to you in the cold weather and that it doesn't have the same cranking power. And I have found that using desulfation chargers on lead-acid batteries does buy me some wiggle and get these batteries back in shape. This is for wet cell batteries, not for AGMs or gel cells or sealed non-wet cell batteries. If they're gone, they're kind of gone. There's no bringing those babies back. The other thing, if you are messing around batteries in this weather, put it on a charger before you put any liquid in it. Although if you see exposed plates, at least cover the plates and charge it before you add fluid. It should be fully charged before water is added to the battery, because many times the water level goes down if the battery is discharged. So that's Tom's handy tidbit on batteries on Saturday morning at 8:55. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll take more phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. We'll see if we can figure out the whole rest of everything here in between This is a little different. I thought I'm trying to sort out Christmas music that I have heard, not heard frequently, but have heard in my my long distance past. This one kind of rang the bell for me. Hey, we're back. 9:06 is Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. Merry Christmas. We're 3 days away. 2 days away. It's just about there is what it is, I'm telling you. And it's foggy and it's warm. I got no complaints. I'm not complaining at all. I want to tell you, Monday, you know, we'd snowed. We did all the plowing. We move. I got too many cars in the way. We move all the cars. We plow and we clean them. We move everything back. I get up Tuesday morning, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this again, man. And if, it just, I was not pleasant. I admit it, I wasn't my usual perky self, as I usually am when I'm shoveling snow and cleaning cars. I don't know. It just sucked all the joy out of the day. It was just a grind, man. I tell you, we lived through it, and then we get a day like today, and man, it was foggy this morning coming up here. It took me forever. Because I just couldn't do anything. I had to drive very carefully. I'm just waiting for a deer to jump out in front of me because the fog was so thick. But that didn't happen, and here I am. And all the rest, as they say, is history. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Let's see. Like you, I got a text here. Like you, I order a few things from online and got stuck waiting a month for hubcaps from eBay. They ship from China. After that, I wised up and watched from where they are shipped and found that I get them shipped in lower 48 much faster. Heard you mention it before and modified my shopping habits and solved the problem. You know, I did too. Those pumps, I ordered three pumps. And they were supposedly coming from California, but I have a feeling they came from China. Either that or they shipped them in some new perverse slow way because I've got stuff from China faster. I don't mind buying from China, if there's a deal to be had, but if it's a couple of bucks, it may not be worth the wait. Many times I find that if you buy stuff on eBay, many times, you place the order, it's got some kind of name for the vendor. And then, I get this thing, that indicates I've paid, and the name is all in Chinese characters. So I know the character I'm buying from is Chinese, which is okay. I mean, but they're establishing, supposedly, stores on this side. It may be, these are businesses that sell 10 or 100,000 things, have, you know, that kind of feedback. So it may just be that it's slow in getting out the door. But that's what feedback is for, and they did not get a good response from Mr. G when it came to shipping time. Not that I'm under the gun, but, you know, come on. This took a long time to get here. I'm a busy guy. I got to have, I got things to do, people to see, places to go. Oh, not really. Let's see. We got no text. I couldn't find the degree day data. Believe it or not, I'll work on that for next week or see if I can't sort it out during the. Oh, wait a minute. Is this? I might. Hang on. This looks like it might be it. I have a feeling this. There it is. Is it going to tell me where we are? No. Oh, this is tremendously helpful. It's an Excel page that has nothing useful. Good. Well, I'm glad we got that on the computer, taking up space. Let's get rid of that. There we go. It took forever to load, and then it didn't have what we were looking for. So our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. Just in case. Now, maybe you haven't finished all your Christmas shopping, and it may be I can help you out. I've got just the thing. All right? I have got a red 50cc Vespa scooter, 2018, that I picked up. And I've got it on the Craigslist. So if you go to Craigslist and put in Vespa and Searsport, you'll find it. Take a look at that baby and see what you think. That's just, you know, you put a big bow on that red Vespa, and it's a cheap date, too. It's got a couple of scrapes. It's really nice. I didn't touch up the couple of scrapes. I left them because that adds character. But it runs good. It's got all that. I had to replace a couple of parts, some lights and stuff. Had a broken mirror. But it runs like a I really like Vespas. And I'm not a motorcycle guy, obviously, if I like Vespas. But I can see that if I was riding a Vespa or, God forbid, a motorcycle, that I would hurt myself. I think it would only be a matter of time that I would have some kind of an impact that would not necessarily be pleasant. But that being said, and I've said this to many folks, if I find one with a sidecar, and it doesn't matter if it's a motorcycle or it's a scooter, I'm going to get it, and that's going to be then the radio program might come to an end very quickly. But I've seen too many Marx Brothers movies with motorcycles with sidecars to not think that that is something I should be involved with. So my friend Charlie MacArthur had a Ural, U-R-A-L, which is a Russian copy of a German World War II BMW. And the one he had a sidecar. And he and I had delusions of converting it to electric, which, of course, we never happened. But and they command good value. I mean, they command a lot of money, but they are kind of cool. So that probably is not going to enter into my equation, but we'll see. Our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. I got everything covered. I've covered all the bases. We got nothing else to talk about other than this weekend I'm going back to painting. And, there's two rooms upstairs, two bedrooms and a bathroom. I've done the bathroom. I've done one bedroom. I started cutting in the second bedroom. And my wife has told me that she would like me to paint the hallway, which goes stairs, to go to the first floor. And that's all well and good. There's a lot of cutting in because I've got wood wainscoting and stuff. And the cutting in is kind of slows you down. But there's, because it's on stairs, there is an area that I can't reach. And I know I painted it 13, 15 years ago. But I don't remember what I did to reach that corner. I have a feeling there was some kind of jerry-rigged planks with a stepladder. and it's kind of like riding the Vespa. I'm thinking, I want to do this now. We'll just leave that. We'll paint that one wall. We'll just leave it the way it is. It'll be a different color. I mean, the new wall will be painted gray, and the old wall will be salmon color. Right? That matches up, doesn't it? What do we got? We got a text here. Forget sleigh ride. Santa making deliveries on a Vespa this year. It could happen. And that's why I'm just a facilitator here to make sure that some lucky person gets a Vespa for Christmas. And I got it up on Craigslist in time, but it still hasn't sold. And I got one here. Those Ural sidecars had two-wheel drive, so you could ride all winter. That's true. They had a drive shaft that came from the from the motorcycle to the sidecar, which is what got Charlie and I all excited, because we figured we could put batteries in the sidecar and hook up an electric motor. And Charlie and I had a lot of things like that we were going to do. But he was up in Dover and I was down in Bangor at the time. And although I did do some projects with him, that one never happened. And anyway, I'll tell you what, we'll take a break here while we're waiting. And I'm just going to play a little bit of this just because I'll tell you why. Okay, I just want to preface this song with two things. My my stepfather, who fancied himself Bing Crosby, loved to sing, always had to watch the Andy Williams Christmas show with the Osmonds, which, you know, as a kid, you wanted to puke. But I find myself singing this song anytime it's a horrible storm or it's wicked cold, and never at Christmas time, although maybe today I will. But anyway, Mr. Andy Williams, wherever he is, he's still singing. Hey, we're back. It is 9:20. It's the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Christmas Eve, a couple days before Christmas. And I apologize for playing Girl Scruggs playing Jingle Bells again, but it's just, if you haven't seen it, it's a great video. It's on YouTube. Put in Earl Scruggs and Jingle Bells, you'll find it. It is really high quality and all A-list performers, and I can't get enough of it. Sweet, sweet stuff. Anyway, I could just play the rest of that. I mean, we could just do that. We don't have to do anything else, do we? Our phone number again, 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. I have another one here queued up. There is a reasonable bit of banjo stuff out there for Christmas, and unfortunately for you, if you're listening, you're going to have to listen to it here on Saturday morning with me because it's, you know, December 22nd, and we got like a couple days, and it has to happen. It does. All my kids are coming over for Christmas this year, and I told them after I play Jingle Bells for them on the banjo, we will have the airing of grievances, so it's something to look forward to. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I'm calling to ask about heat pumps up here in Central Maine and looking for recommended vendors and which brand would you recommend?
Well, there's two brands that seem to be leading the pack. One is Fujitsu, the other is Mitsubishi. I'm not going to go into specific vendors just because there's enough of them out there. What you're looking for when you shop vendors, though, is you know, how many have they done? And I would ask for some local references just to see what's what. The Fujitsu and Mitsubishis are I think there's probably more Fujitsus in the area than Mitsubishis, but they're both fairly close. I did have somebody call in during the week who had a problem with the Mitsubishi in terms of software. excuse me, and we're not happy. And just so folks know, in terms of heat pumps in particular, if you haven't, because so many people are putting them in, you know, you do have recourse. These are both reasonably sized companies, and they have regional representation. So you may have, if you're having a problem, you work your way back up the ladder. So that being said, the first step is to get a good experienced installer, of which there are many in 2018, 2019, because there are so many heat pumps out there. But just in case, for those of you out there who might have a problem, you have leverage because you are a consumer. There's consumer protections in place. If you're not getting satisfaction from the dealer, you call the manufacturer. They have an 800 number on the paperwork. If they ain't helping you, you tell them you'll be talking to the Secretary of State. And the Attorney General. You could talk Secretary of State, too. It just won't help. You go to the Attorney General's office. And if that doesn't light a fire under someone's posterior, then you go, you know, say, well, we'll see you in small claims court or regular claims court or whatever. You don't want to go to that point. You just want the thing to work right. And then they do. I mean, you know, again, an experienced installer can sort out the problem, even if that means having to change out hardware. These are fairly simple devices for these folks to put in. And if there's a problem or you've got a unit that had some kind of weird problem, it's not a big deal to swap it out. It's just you have to sometimes have to light a fire under the posterior. That's what you have to do. Totally unrelated, but every week I come in here and there's the Main Edge, which is a free kind of newspaper-type publication that comes out locally. And my friend Mike Dow writes for this and gets to interview a lot of amazing people. And this week he has, in this recent issue, I was just talking to him about it, he interviewed George Takei from Star Trek. And it's a very impressive interview. George, being Japanese-American, was interned during World War II and talks about the whole process. And he was 5 years old at the time I've got the article here. I read it. I'm going to bring it home and read it again just because it's a big article, and they did the long version. Mike said he had done two copies, the short version and the long version, and the Edge put in the long one, which is a good thing. Mike said that George talked to him for a long time because Mike believes he did not ask him any Star Trek questions. Excuse me. But at the end of the interview, George said, "Live long and prosper." So how cool is that? Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Our text, 601-207-4478. Everybody's out there shopping, I bet. I was out bright and early this morning, and the stores were pretty busy. I have to say, the Home Depot wasn't real busy. I wound up at Home Depot looking for something, and that wasn't as busy as the other stores that I tend to frequent on Saturday mornings before the big radio broadcast. But I had to get the batteries. Got to have the batteries, man. So that mission's been accomplished. And I needed some motor oil too, so I got batteries and motor oil and two snow shovels, because what is Christmas without new? My son Pete, if he's listening, Pete, I got new snow shovels. He said after Tuesday he was not real happy with the snow shovels we have, which are ancient at the shop. So he got new snow shovels for Christmas. That's the kind of dad I am. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could talk about heat pump air conditioners in the window. I've seen them. I don't know how well they might work.
Sure. Be glad to. I don't think they work. They work, okay. They don't work that well. They're not as going to be near as efficient as a mini split would be, and I wouldn't want to be relying on that for any kind of space heating, especially in the really cold weather. It's funny. I just took out a window air conditioner that was mounted in the wall of our shop over in Stockton where we're moving to. It was permanently mounted. And assumedly, the inside portion of that air conditioner and the outside portion are segregated. But unless we box that thing with a lot of insulation, cold air just spilled out of that sucker. I think we could say the same thing is similar for a heat pump air conditioner that mounts in a window. There's not a lot of physical separation that protects you from having a window half open year-round. It maybe not cold air spilling in, but there's surfaces that are getting really cold, much less insulated than the wall would be. So what's nice about a mini split, the outdoor unit and the indoor unit are separated by the wall of the building, and the only thing that penetrates the building are the two refrigerant lines, which are very small and insulated more probably than a window air conditioner heat pump would be, and some wiring and stuff. And also, those units just don't have the efficiency. All the coils and everything are smaller, so you just don't get the performance. And considering the cost, I don't think they're worth the investment unless you're maybe living in Georgia or something, or Alabama. There it might make some sense, but here in Maine it's just not a good investment. Let's go over to line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling to find out about what you knew about Viessmann condensing boilers. I've had a Renai in for the last 9 years and would like the boiler, except that it seems like every year I have some fairly major maintenance problem. And the guys who have worked on it have been good. But when they wind up calling for support, support has not been good at all. And this last one, they wound up working pretty much all day. It started out with a call to support, and support saying they call back. By the time support called back, they had the thing all torn apart, and really all it was a they just needed to fix a code in it. And if support had just told them that in the morning, everybody could have been gone home happy, and instead we wind up with a major bill. And
yeah.
Anyways, what they're telling me is that at 9 years, it's nearing the end of its life, which I think is kind of crazy. But anyways, they're suggesting that a Viessmann is a better boiler. And so I wondered what you could tell me about that.
Well, I can't tell you much. I have no experience with Viessmann gas boilers. I do know Viessmann oil boilers were built like tanks. And every so often I see one, I just want to buy it because it's such a well-designed thing. But this is oil. I would say that there's a parallel with the gas units, just intuitively. And if your technicians who have to fix these things are trying to guide you towards it, I would take that as a pretty good sign, knowing the fact that Viessmann does make very high-quality stuff that appears to be quite durable. Now, the trade-off here is that when we're talking about a gas appliance, especially a condensing gas appliance, there is some potentially some durability, or there are some durability issues here potentially. So I don't know what the warranty is on it, on the heat exchanger in particular, but that would be my area of concern.
In terms of corrosion? Or?
Yeah, and that would be with any condensing appliance, not necessarily a Viessmann. So I would be looking at the warranty on that. Unfortunately, I think the 9 years maybe is the new normal for gas appliances in particular, just because of these kinds of issues coming up, and they become more electronic as time goes on. I think maybe... they're more durable as we get more experience under our belts. But I would have no major qualms about Viessmann other than the price, which I suspect is strong. And maybe not. I've not priced it. And I'd be looking at the warranty. But I think an endorsement from the guys who had to spend a day screwing around with a Renai is probably holds pretty good muster.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. And I just wanted to mention at the end of the last part of the show, you kind of made me chuckle. I, at the ripe old age of 67, a couple of years ago, I had a fella I worked with who was retiring, and I bought his 1984 Goldwing with a Carl Vetter designed sidecar on it.
Yeah.
And I've been riding that for the last couple of years, and that's a ball. It's a lot of fun.
Let me tell you something. I bought a Goldwing at auction just to upset my son. No other good reason. Just because, he says I buy crazy things like Vespas. And I got the damn thing in, and it scared the hell out of me. I said, man, if this falls over, it is going to kill me. Just moving it around my shop was like, what I did with it is I strapped it to a pallet. So we can move it around because, I'm roughly 6'3 and 160 pounds, and I'm not the guy to be moving a Goldwing around without a sidecar. If it had the sidecar, I probably would have kept it. But it's good to know. I'm glad somebody out there is enjoying them. Take care. Merry Christmas.
Right.
Thanks.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks. Bye-bye. We got to take a break. It is time. It's 8:33. What do we got? I already played the Earl. This is not not Christmas. It's banjo-y. That's something. But I've got a Christmas thing we'll play after the break. It's just, there is a tuner there. If you want to listen to rock and roll, you just go right ahead. I understand. I'm a big boy. I got big boy pants on today. So it's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning, Christmas Eve. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Tony Trischka on the banjo. He's got a great Christmas album. If you're looking for bluegrass, banjo type, no, bluegrass, that's for sure. But banjo Christmas music that really is good stuff. I can't do that. Okay. And I'm going to fix the microphone on the air because that's the kind of day it's been. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text is 601-207-4478. I was in Tozier's market in Searsport the other day, and Mr. Tozier came up to me and told me that rumor had it I had bought a restaurant. And no, I have not bought a restaurant. I ran a restaurant once, more than once, but that was another life, part of my checkered past. And I gained weight. It was fun. I was always noshing. It was a good time. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Yes. Is this Hot and Cold?
It is. You're on the air.
Yes. I had my home insulated back in 2005, blown in fiber. And I'm remodeling my kitchen, and I find out that the outside wall, at least on the kitchen, has nothing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have any way of going back to the people that did the work and say, you missed something?
I would say, you know, tell them it's kind of interesting they missed it. My son had his house insulated a couple of years ago, and we have a thermal imaging camera. He went back and found some spots, and they came right back and did it.
My thought was do thermal imaging, and I know there are companies around that do that as a service.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, take a look at the whole house and see, hey, what got done and what didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, you can, okay. If you have a smartphone, an iPhone or an Android, there's a couple of companies that make plugins for your phones. And
oh.
I bet if you got on eBay, you find a used one that they're $100 and less.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want a toy, you know, to play with.
Well, yeah, sure. I checked in with somebody that does that as a service, and they want $250. So,
yeah, you could buy one for less than that, and then you've got one to play with for the rest of your life. And nothing's more fun than a thermal imaging camera, let me tell you.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank
okay.
you.
Good luck. Bye-bye. Let's see, over to line two. Good morning, you're on The Voice of Maine.
Hello, Tom, how are you today?
Good, thanks, how are you?
Good, very good. Merry Christmas early to you as well.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a couple of questions about hot and cold on my house initially, mm-hmm. both top and bottom. Let's start with the bottom. I have about a 4-foot crawl space, and it is insulated with just the regular unfaced pink fiberglass.
Mm-hmm.
Insulation. I assume it does okay. Is that something? The house is about 10 years old.
What part of the crawl space is insulated? The floor or the walls?
Just the floor.
Okay.
Just the floor and the rafters above. The walls are it's a fully concrete dry space too.
Okay.
It doesn't ever get wet.
Good.
But is that adequate? If it's not, what would I replace it with?
Well,
and let's start there. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's start there. The first question is, are your feet warm enough? And if they're not, I would suggest getting a layer of foam that you would put onto the bottom of the floor joists. So you're enclosing the fiberglass.
The floor rafters, right?
Well, underneath them, just put full sheets up, nail it up with some roofing nails. Or you could roofing nails probably be the most expedient, and I would say
just leave the fiberglass in there, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, just leave it there, and foam full sheets, 4x8 sheets would be great, and inch anything over one inch or over would be fine, and I think you'll see an improvement in comfort.
Okay, and then that sounds like a good one. I wish I had a 6-foot crawl space because it's painful to go down to the store or anything or to...
Yeah, is it a dirt floor or is it concrete?
No, it's concrete floor.
Okay. You might want to get a automotive creeper to work on.
That's an idea.
Yeah.
That's an idea. That's a great idea, actually. I'll take you up on that one.
Yeah, that's the voice of experience.
yeah, my back.
Yeah.
The other end is up at the house. I have the main portion of the house. It's about a 1,400-square-foot house. Has a fairly high-pitched roof. I finally have access to the attic. I never had access. I had to build an attic access. Mm-hmm. It seems to be the insulation that's in and is more than adequate. It's probably at least a foot plus.
Mm-hmm.
But I still get, in the winter, I get melting that starts at the top, about the top few feet. And if I don't keep those bottom edge of the roof clear, I can get significant ice. And I've learned my lesson to keep the snow off right after snowstorms. But is there something that more that I could do to help insulate the top so I wouldn't have that melting at the top of the roof?
Well, when you say you have insulation in the attic, is it fiberglass? Fiberglass bats?
Yes. Yeah. They're blown in.
Yeah.
It
is blown in.
I believe it's blown in. Yeah, I believe so.
I would go with a little bit more. I'd top it off maybe with at least another 6 inches of cellulose on top of the fiberglass, and see if that helps. 6 to 8 inches maybe would make sense. And also, I would be looking for any places where heat might sneak up through any voids, and certainly where you've cut an access hole, and make sure that's insulated and sealed with weather stripping.
Right.
And that will help you as well. What color is your roof?
It's a light brown shingle.
Okay, and you're seeing melting. The other thing might be ventilation. What kind of ventilation do you have up there?
Just the eave ventilation. There's that comes back basically the baffles that keep the insulation away from the edges of the roof sheeting, so that it that could get back down. But there's enough, there is a ridge vent, but I don't know how much gets there. So I had contemplated putting in a gable vent on the walls
that might
at either end.
That might help keep the roof a little bit cooler. But first, I would be dealing with heat loss and trying just to bump it up a little bit more.
Okay, and then last thing on that too. Have you ever used like the foam insulation that has the reflective material to help with the radiant energy that gets into that comes to the roof from the sun? Is that a worthwhile product or no?
Well, foil face foam is okay. There's no reason not to use it. It's not really an effect. The benefit from a heat loss point of view is minimal. The benefit of foam in general is what's important. If it's foil-faced, it is kind of a secondary issue for what we're trying to do here. And in the under your floor, it isn't even necessary there. It just happens that
I didn't think so,
much of it is foil-faced. In the attic, it's not going to make a difference. So, and there's no easy way. There's not a practical approach to do this other than if you were spraying foam up against the roof deck. And I would say at this point it's easier just to put 6 or 8 inches of cellulose on top of what you have and see if that solves the issue. I suspect it'll go a long way.
That and maybe the gable vents as well. Okay.
Right.
Thank you so much.
I
found your show on Saturdays. It's fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks. Merry Christmas. A couple of texts have come in during the break. Have you ever heard of a generator powering a heat pump during a power outage? Yes. How about that? That was easy. It has to be the right size, of course. Would you use a 115-volt heat pump or a 220-volt heat pump to heat a garage 25 by 25 that's insulated? I think any heat pump that's got any capacity would have to be the higher voltage, 220-volt. You really ought to do a heat load calculation, but I can tell you from experience, most heat pumps that put out anything of heating capacity of some substance or higher level are going to be 220 volt. That may be a wiring issue for you, but it really shouldn't be. It's not that big a deal to run a 220 line to the heat pump from wherever. Let's see. Our phone number 1-800-966-1039, and we go right back over to line one. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I know this subject has been hashed over often, but I got a full basement, concrete walls, everything. Floors painted, walls are painted. No leaks as of this morning, last night, and yesterday's rain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite pleased with that. I want to insulate. 2 inches of rigid foam adequate, or should I go more? And then I want to put, like, plywood. So, and then maybe paint it, whatever, so I can hang things. It's going to be a workshop type of basement.
Yeah. I would say a little more might make sense. I think at this point in time, you want to see about at least R19 So that's a little more than 2 inches, a little bit more like 3 inches of foam. For yourself, I mean, if money's an issue, 2 inches is better than nothing, and will be much more comfortable than just having, you know, a wall there with pegboard with no insulation, something like that. So,
because I got a wood stove down there, and what I was going to use is Z channel to hold the insulation to the walls.
Yep. Yep.
And then maybe a 2 inch first, and then before I put the plywood or whatever I'm going to use, a 1 inch, another inch of rigid foam, and then tech screw through the plywood through the foam.
Sure.
Onto the Z channel. That should be all right.
That sounds good. I like it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Right over to line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
All right. Thank you. Yes, sir. I have a question. My heat pump sometimes blows cold air, and why is that?
It may be in a defrost cycle, what happens is, especially when it's right around freezing, the outside coils depends on the humidity. If it's humid and it's around freezing, like weather today or tonight or whatever, you'll tend to build up ice on the coils because you're cooling. Uh-huh. The outside coil is chilling. It's extracting heat from the air, so it cools down and it condenses out that moisture and freezes. When that happens, the heat pump has to reverse and melt that ice off. So it may be that's what you're sensing, where you have this intermittent cool air coming through.
Yeah, I really like the thing. It works great, you know, but once in a while it'll just do that. Well, I think that probably explains it then. But that's normal then, right?
Yeah, it should be, yeah.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So here's the thing. Here's the fun thing you should do. When you feel it, you run outside and see if there's ice on the coil. And just to be positive, you know, and make sure there's nothing else weird going on. But heat pump, you know, we sold heat pump water heaters, and folks always asked about using them for space heat. And this stands for the ones you would buy at Home Depot that are currently being sold. The answer is you can't, because they do not have a defrost cycle built into them. The defrosting of a heat pump water heater is just shutting off the compressor and the circulator pumps and just letting the fan run and using air temperature, which has to be above 45 degrees or higher to melt any ice that forms. So when it's, say, zero out and you've got that Fujitsu, a mini split, and it goes into the defrost cycle, it's going to have to reverse to take a little bit of energy to defrost those coils. And it doesn't take very long. These, you know, obviously we want them to be heating as much as possible, not having to defrost a lot, but it does make a difference. Now, that being said, if there is a possibility that there could be a refrigerant leak, which would indicate that this was happening more frequently, but that's not something you're going to diagnose. It'd be something I think the heat pump is apt to tell you. We would throw a code, or a service person can tell you. So, and I'm looking at the clock. We are just about out of time. What happened here? I went through the whole show just like that. It's because of the Christmas music. Look, I hope you folks out there have a great Christmas, and you can stay calm and have fun and enjoy family. And we will talk to you next week as we head towards the end of the year. 2018 was certainly different. And Mr. Frank, there we go. If I turn the right button, we can listen to Francis a little bit. Take care. Merry Christmas. See you soon.